You're listening to Self-Propelled, a podcast that explores the process of turning ideas into reality and the secrets behind keeping up momentum once you've started. I'm Dave Cornthwaite, and for 15 years I've experimented my way through a series of personal and social adventures, including Expedition 1000, a self-set mission to complete 25 different non-motorized journeys, each over 1,000 miles. I also founded the Yes Tribe, an optimistic community bonded by the idea of making the most of their time and potential, often by saying yes more. Join me for stories and conversations with self-starters, athletes, and entrepreneurs who need nothing more than a good idea to add a little fuel to that pilot light burning deep within us all. Welcome back to the Self-Propelled Podcast. My next guest is Isla Marsh. She's a snow sports instructor who loves the outdoors, adventure, and cold water swimming. She spends her time usually between Japan, France, the UK, and Australia, but recently was given 24 hours to get out of France as coronavirus sent the country into lockdown. She's now back in the UK, and I'm really happy she can join me now. Hi, Isla.
Hiya.
Could you, before we start, could you set the scene for our listeners? Where are you right now? What county, what part of the country, and what does your room look like?
So I am in Dorset, back in the home I grew up in, with my parents and my sister, who's come down to escape London as well. So we've got a bit of a full house at the moment, and I'm back in my childhood bedroom, which has been turned into a spare bedroom. So it looks pretty clean, apart from all the suitcases that I've brought home. Luckily, my parents haven't sold the house yet because it's on the market at the moment. So that could have been a bit of a disaster, but it's all going well so far.
Well, that does sound lucky. Is that why your childhood bedroom is no longer your childhood bedroom? Because they were getting it ready for sale?
No, actually, even though, when did I move out? Maybe 8 years ago, but as soon as I moved out, they changed it into a spare bedroom, whereas when my sister moved out, hers seemed to stay exactly the same as it was when we both lived at home. So don't know how that happened, but it's been changed for a while.
It sounds like you're pretty chilled out with that. And also, you've obviously spent a lot of the last few years abroad, so not necessarily using that bedroom as much as needed.
Yeah, exactly. This is actually the first time I'll be in the UK for longer than about a month at a time. Probably for 7 or 8 years.
Wow. So mindset wise, how are you treating this current situation?
I'm actually okay about it. I obviously it's going to take a little bit of a time for everything to sink in and for everyone to get to grips with the uncertainty, but I've kind of slipped into a bit of a routine. So get up in the morning, do some fitness, just try and spend as much of my day outdoors as well. But I'm quite good because I have an interseason period where I'm not working normally for May and October. I'm actually quite good at slipping into this. Okay, so I don't have work for a month. It will probably be after a month's up and I'm ready to go back to winter, and winter doesn't actually arrive, that I might find it a little bit more tricky.
When that itch returns.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we start talking more about coronavirus and the impact it's had on you and the tourism industry in general, how did you get into being a snow sports instructor?
So I was on family holidays pretty much every Christmas and New Year as a kid from the age of about 3 months old. I think the first time I was in a ski resort. And then I originally was meant to do a gap year as a ski instructor and do some of my qualifications. And then it got round to going back to uni, and I thought, actually, I quite like being paid to be outside on the snow every day. So sacked that off, and technically still on my gap year 8 years later.
So you didn't go to university at all?
I didn't, no. I was meant to go and do sports engineering at Loughborough, but never made it up there.
How did your family and friends react to that?
I think everyone who knows me kind of figured that it was going to happen anyway, because no one really put me in university together. Wasn't exactly the most committed to my studies at school.
Well put. So it seems like pretty early on you found the thing you felt you were supposed to be doing.
over the last, it's been 8 years, I think, since this new career began. Have you tried out other jobs and roles in that time?
What have I else? I've done a little bit of lifeguarding on the side, and I used to be a swim teacher in the sort of interseason breaks. But apart from that, I haven't had another job since I was at school and used to be a waitress. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
So talk us through what being a snow sports instructor looks like, not just your day to day, but your year to year.
So if we're going for, I would normally start my year in about October or November rather than a January to December year. So November, I normally head out to Japan and I start work mid-November running training camps for people training to be instructors. And then my teaching season in Japan starts from about mid-December, and then I work through until the end of February in Japan. And then it starts to get a little bit quiet because all the Japanese holidays are starting to be over and the Asians tend to go somewhere hot for their holiday rather than coming skiing during the Easter break. So I actually head back to Europe and I work in France for March and April. And then end of April, come back to the UK, see some friends, normally go to a wedding or two, and then head to Australia at the start of June. And I'm there until the end of September for work. And then I use October mainly to go do some traveling or just get hot. So my feet get very cold. So go anywhere that I can go to the beach or just let my body recover from being in winter for the whole year.
Oh, just brilliant. Some people might be surprised to hear that there's actually a ski season or snow season in Australia.
I know. It's not your typical snow season. I mean, there's quite a lot of fake snow, but we make it work and it's a great time and really great scenery as well. So.
And you're up in the snowy mountains, is that right?
Yeah, in the snowy mountains. I work at a resort called Perisher and I work coaching a bunch of 13-year-old kids. So we'll see what their season has entailed for them this winter.
Yeah, remains to be seen.
Yeah.
It sounds like now you're pretty sorted and you're on a roll. How long did it take to build up the connections in these different countries and be sure of where you were heading next?
I would say I've probably only been quite stable in the industry for the last 3 years. So the first 5 years were kind of finding my feet, but also figuring out what I wanted out of the industry and what kind of direction I wanted to take instructing to, because there's quite a lot of different handles you can do throughout instructing. You can just be a snow sports instructor, or you can specialize in a certain discipline or a certain age group or a certain field within the instructing world. So there's quite a lot of things you can do. So it took me a while to figure out actually where my place was in the industry. But then once I'd got that sorted, connections can happen quite quickly if you're engaging and make the right contacts at the right time.
So it took you 5 years of working to finally consider yourself sustainable. Would that be the right word?
Yeah, I'd say so. Because also the first few years I was training. So you have a four-tiered system. I trained with the British system and we have four levels of instructor. And it normally takes at least, I'd say, 3 or 4 years to get to your top level of certification.
Okay. And when you started out, was it more you just wanted to play in the snow, or did you have a bit of a map ahead of you? You wanted to be a teacher, a trainer, and was it almost inevitable once you got to that stage that you ended up training other teachers?
I think when I started out, I was so young that when I started out that I just wanted to be in the snow, basically. I wanted to do something fun that would earn me a bit of money. And then it turned into something that I thought, actually, I'm pretty good at this. And then I can go and do all these other things on the side. And the instructor training has come along a little bit later on in the seasons when I've got a bit more experience and understood a little bit more about the ski world and about skiing itself and all these different kind of things that go with it.
Let's talk about coronavirus and how that's impacted your industry. Obviously, you wrote to me before this and said that Asia, obviously being the first place to be hit with COVID, it had a big impact on your bookings. Of course, you know, coming out of China, it was Asia that suffered first. So did you see that this problem, did you expect the problem to then roll into the European season?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a weird one because I think to start with, because I was in Japan when all of this kicked off, I had quite a lot of information thrown at me from the Japanese news, and no one in the ski world in Europe knew anything about it. No one in Europe in general really knew much about it. And then we have two Chinese instructors that worked at the ski school I worked for in Japan, and they were getting all this information from home, from people talking about it in China as well. So we'd kind of been bombarded, and then bookings started to get cancelled. And the first real big event that happened was Hong Kong closed all the schools. And so we had quite a lot of clients that ended up staying for a little bit longer because there was no rush to go back because the schools were closed. So their kids didn't have to go back anywhere. So that was kind of the first thing. And we thought, oh, this is great. Like, we've got some extra bookings coming in because no one's going back to Hong Kong. And then it got to maybe the start of February, and it was getting very quiet in the ski school. So Chinese New Year was over, and there's about 65 instructors at the ski school I work for, and it was starting to get quite quiet at the bottom of the roster. And then we heard the rumours that a lot of Thai clients were cancelling, which is basically all of our bookings in February. So we heard about that, and I ended up working, I think, maybe 2.5 weeks in February. So that wasn't... Yeah, it wasn't the best thing for my bank balance, but at least I could go skiing.
And then did you move back to Europe sooner than ordinarily you would have? And how long were you in France before you had to leave again?
Yeah, so that was a bit of a weird one. I was had a flight booked with China Eastern, but they cancelled my flight. So I was meant to fly out on the 11th of March. Ended up flying out in the end on the 5th of March because it was so quiet, and I thought, well, I should probably get back to Europe while I can still make some money there before the end of the season. So flew back to the UK for the weekend, flew out to France on the Monday, and then the resort closed the following Saturday night.
Okay.
So I was there for just under a week.
Just under a week. And then yeah. It sounds like you had a bit of an adventure to get out before the borders closed.
Yeah, well, we thought it was coming because obviously Switzerland and Italy and Austria had all pulled the pin before the French ski resorts. So I went snowboarding on the Saturday, had a great day up there because I thought, oh, this might be one of my last days, thinking I could probably go skiing on the Sunday as well. So I'd done a bit of both. And then we got the news through at 9 o'clock at night on the Saturday that France was closing all their ski resorts immediately, so no more skiing the next day. And actually they were closing all of their bars and restaurants and stuff as well. So at that point, me and my flatmate were sat in our pajamas, and we actually got changed and went out for a drink because we thought, this is probably going to be the last time we do this, so we should make the most of it. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. So getting out of France then became a bit of like a frantic scramble because you had all the tourists still in town that were... Like, Saturday's a changeover day, so a lot of people had just come into town for their week of skiing. So all the transfer companies were moving people out to Geneva, and then we heard that Geneva were going to shut the border to France. So I was like, okay, I've got to get out. But then at that point, a lot of the flights had already been booked, so I wasn't quite sure what to do. And I got a call from one of my friends who had flown back to the UK for a couple of weeks of work in the UK and had left her car in Morzine. And so ended up frantically packing all of her stuff and all of my stuff into a very tiny Fiat Panda and scrambling back to Calais as quickly as possible.
Wow. So you drove her car back?
Yeah, so drove her car back, got back about 12 hours before they closed the border.
Man.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was fun, though.
Definitely a little different. To keep you on your toes. So the next snow season starts in Australia in June, or usually would, but of course now this is a waiting game. How are you adapting to this changing field of play?
So it's looking quite unlikely that internationals are going to get out to Australia for the season, even if they do open, just because Australia has now closed all their borders apart from citizens anyway. So I've kind of been brainstorming. It's quite nice having, we're back in family home, so I've got three other brains to pick about what I should do. And we have been brainstorming different career ideas for me, because I've been thinking about maybe having a summer at some point as well, and what I would do over the summer. But in the last year, both my parents and my sister have bought sort of renovation houses. So I've been doing a lot of handiwork in my off season. So thinking now that I might train in some kind of trade if I don't end up going to Australia. So that could be all right.
It seems to be a very good time to learn a new skill or three.
Or five.
Let's see how long this goes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You never know. So I don't know actually how long I'm going to have to be in the UK for. So I may as well make the most of it while I can.
I love your optimism. And I think this attitude will take you and anybody else who carries it through anything in life, good and bad. I have a few random questions, not necessarily to do with the career or coronavirus, before we wrap up. Do you mind if I just throw some at you?
Yeah, go for it.
So what does adventure mean to you?
Something outside the box that doesn't always go to plan, but normally is better if it doesn't go to plan.
What are you most proud of?
I think probably the fact that I still have a smile on my face most of the time, even though stuff can go very wrong.
So speaking of that, what keeps you going when things get tough?
The fact that you can always find something funny to laugh about. Sense of humour as well.
What's your favourite place and why?
My favourite place is Durdle Door, which is a little beach that most people will know. It's quite famous. But if you go there in the evening or early in the morning and no one's there and it's sunrise or sunset, it's just the most beautiful place. And going swimming through the door was one of my favourite things as a kid. So it's just got lots of happy memories and always makes me feel quite peaceful.
Oh, I'd absolutely echo that. If you've heard of Alistair Humphreys, he's an adventurer and writer. Al and I enjoyed a very cool micro adventure. I taught him how to stand up paddleboard, and the aim was to get him through Durdle Door without falling.
Nice! It can be quite choppy through the door as well.
Yeah, so it can. You'll have to dig out the YouTube video to find out whether he succeeded. What does living a good life mean to you?
Living a good life, having something that you enjoy doing every day, having nice food, drinking coffee. I think that's about it. Enjoying what's around you and the scenery rather than material items.
If you could change anything in your life right now, what would it be?
Apart from the obvious of being able to keep working, I don't really think I'd change anything.
What's been the happiest moment of your life?
Oh, that's tough. Probably skiing neck deep powder in Japan and being so euphoric that noises come out your mouth without you even realise you're making them.
How do you define happiness if it's not euphoric noises?
Laughter, smiling. That's about it. As long as you're laughing and you've got a smile on your face, I think you're happy.
If it's not driving your friend's car back to England before the border closed, what has been the most spur of the moment crazy adventure you've taken on?
I do quite a lot of spur of the moment things. I'm not very organized as a person. So actually me and my sister went on a trip last October to Croatia, Montenegro and Albania and hadn't planned a single thing. On our way to the airport, we were thinking we should book insurance, and then we were thinking we should probably book somewhere to stay and a car to drive in. And then we got to the point where we were on our trip in Montenegro trying to get to Albania, and we were like, we don't actually know how we're going to get here or what we're going to do. And it was all a little bit dodgy, but we made it in the end and it was great fun.
If anyone's listening to this and thinks, oh, I'd absolutely love to be like that, I'd love to go on an adventure without planning anything, what would your advice to them be?
don't panic, because there's always somewhere you're going to be able to stay or something you're going to be able to do, because the internet has many options and you can always knock on people's doors. You're never out of options.
What does kindness mean to you?
Having the foresight to think of what other people are thinking about before you ask them anything.
It's almost like I pre-prepared you, which I totally didn't. That was an awesome answer. Last question. Finish this sentence. The most important thing in life is...
health.
Beautiful. Isla, thanks so much for spending 20 minutes of your day with me. I really enjoyed chatting. That was awesome. It makes me want to go and be a snow sports instructor.
No problem. I really enjoyed it as well.
If you'd like to follow Isla's adventures, she's on social media, on Instagram, at Isla Marsh. That's ISLAMARSH. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Self-Propelled Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please do subscribe so you don't miss other episodes, and leave us a nice review and say hi to Isla on her Instagram as well.